Good evening, everyone.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to be back here at Valley Streams. It's been about a year since I last came and visited. And I thank you for inviting me, Jim. And thanks, everyone who's here tonight, for coming. And also those of you who are listening from your homes. Thank you. So I thought about what to say. I have a friend at Enso Village. Enso Village is the name of the community I'm living with now, who is not a Buddhist. And I told her I was coming to give a Dharma talk. She said, "What is a Dharma talk? How is a Dharma talk different from any other talk?" And I thought about it, and I think, and there are many ways of thinking about a Dharma talk. One of the ones I really appreciate from my friend Greg Fain is that he says, "I just want to encourage everyone's practice." And I think that's a good reason for giving a Dharma talk and for listening to Dharma talks. But I also think that, you know, the Dharma, perhaps initially was the teachings of the Buddha, but I understand it in a much broader way, that everyone and everything teaches us the Dharma. Every experience in our life can teach us about living in an upright way, in a connected way, in a way that expresses our compassion for ourselves and other beings. So I found the theme for my talk today actually in my new kitchen. So I am in transition. I moved to Enso Village almost exactly a year ago in March, and I was working until the end of 2025. And there are some people at Enso Village who are still working, but we are a community of elders, and it's partly supported by an organization called Kendall, which is Quaker-based. So it has both people who are Quakers, people who are Buddhist practitioners, people of many different faith traditions. There are about 300 people living there now. After living at San Francisco Zen Center mostly in one room for many years, I now have an apartment. And I brought with me something that I received at a practice period at Green Gulch Farm that was led by my teacher, Linda Cutts, who I also want to thank for her support over many years. And this is a miniature. I think it's like a slotted spoon that is used for cooking. And at the end of the practice period, she gave everyone one of these with this quote from one of our Zen ancestors, Ehe Dogen, who lived around 1,200 years ago and wrote many very wonderful essays. And this is from, wouldn't call it an essay, but it was a teaching he did called Instructions for the Cook. And this quote is, "When you take care of things, do not see with your common eyes. Do not think with your common sentiments." So I thought I would talk tonight about taking care of things. And I'll be talking not only about things, but also taking care of ourselves and one another and widening it to all beings. And it feels like in this time, you know, very fraught in our country and the world, learning how to take care of, or just paying attention to taking care of things, can be very grounding and healing and connecting. So I'll be talking about what this means to take care of things and ourselves and one another, and including two poems. As Jim said, I do love poetry, and I feel poetry can be a very helpful way of tuning in to what might be hard to say in other ways, and or it goes deep. It can go touch a place that opens up more possibilities. So there's a short essay that Suzuki Roshi wrote, or it's part of the collection Not Always So. It's called Respect for Things. And one of the things he says is that we should respect everything, and we can practice respecting things in the way we relate with them. And one of the ways we relate to things is how we pick them up, how we hold them. I think, you know, the practice at San Francisco Zen Center, which began with Suzuki Roshi's teachings in person, is very influenced by Japanese culture. And one of the things I appreciate is the care. If you go into a store in Japantown, often they will wrap whatever you buy very beautifully, and they hand it to you with two hands, and you receive it with two hands. And just that kind of awareness that we're actually receiving something, it brings a level of appreciation for through the gesture. And so there are many ways of showing respect for things. One of the things I remember I when I started out at San Francisco Zen Center and we would have service, I would sometimes move my cushion with my foot, and I was told not to do that, but to pick it up and put it down. And holding the chant book, erase the chant book when you receive it because it's a sacred object, and holding our raksus, you know, two hands at chest level before, and putting them on, we put them on our heads first. These things may seem strange, you know, at first, but I think they help develop the sense of respect for things. And why do we do this? And there's a line in Dogen's teaching of the Tenzo Kyokun instructions for the cook that says, handle every single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. So if we think even a leaf of spinach or chard that we're putting in a soup as manifesting the body of the Buddha, take care of it. We are respectful of it, and we, you know, it's hard, you know, after living at Zen Center for so long, I got very used to, before sitting down at the table, bowing to the other people at the table, and as a way of showing respect for the people I'm eating with, and then we do a meal chant. So most of us don't do that in everyday life, and yet there are other, just being aware when we sit down to eat of how that food came to us, being grateful for all the people who grew it, and the people who prepared it. And the gratitude to be able to taste and enjoy it. Not taking things for granted. I think that's part of what I learned. And Suzuki Roshi also said in his essay, or I think it was originally a talk on respect for things, because we respect ourselves, because we put faith in our life, we sit. That is our practice. So through our meditation, through sitting, we can also learn to listen to ourselves and respect ourselves. Listen to the tone of voice when we speak to ourselves, what words we use. And you know, sometimes maybe a very self-critical voice, might recognize that and find a way to be kind when we make a mistake or we're having a difficult day. So there's a poem that I think shares this kind of awareness and brings it, expresses it through a number of different ways of appreciating creatures in the world, and then beyond that, to appreciating one another. And it's called "For the Love of Spiders." And some of you may, spiders, yeah. It's by a poet who lives in San Rafael named Emily Ligren. And I'm going to read part of it now and rest of it a little later. I heard, so when I said spiders, perhaps you connected with an experience you've had with a spider or spiders. And spiders have a very bad rap. But is that justified? So the poem goes into this question and then takes it way beyond. For the love of spiders. Today, pulling weeds in the garden, I saw a spider whose abdomen and head and legs were bright green, the same shade of plant I just wrested from the ground. I let out a little gasp as the wind pressed through the grass's spindled seed heads, and I felt a familiar wonder bloom within me. The thought, I have never seen this before. Which comes if I move slowly enough to let myself get drenched in surprise. And suddenly the spider became all the things I don't know yet, climbing the wooden fences at the edge of my brain, woven so delicately with mystery, poise, dew, just after rain. And I thought of all the photos of spiders that friends and neighbors have shared on Facebook and next door. Look at what I found in my house. What should I do with it? The commenters almost always have the same chorus, kill it. It's definitely a brown recluse. While my scientist friend and I patiently ask them not to, point out at least 5 observable differences between their spider and the recluse, explain that there are over 3,000 species of spiders in North America, and recluses don't even live in this part of California. Tell them it's probably a colobium, who are so fond of wandering inside come autumn, resist giving a lecture on how when you say probably in science, it means you're actually pretty damn sure, but want to leave some room in case you're wrong. And I thought, there it is again. how easily we press danger on the innocent, on what we don't know. How many people have been killed for looking like a threat when they had done nothing wrong, when they were just existing in their body? How quickly suspicion rises when we're not curious enough. The swiftness with which we reach for hate. How the gun is grasped before one word is spoken. So I'm going to read, there's more to the poem which I'll share later, but I think the using the image of the spider and how easily we make assumptions and may respond from fear and then kill the spider. How she makes the connection with how often we may prejudge people and shut down and or strike out, and how much harm can be done because we don't take the time to find out who we're really meeting. And I think one of the ways that we can take care of ourselves and be more open to people we meet has to do with being aware of some of the ways we may be prejudging a person. And not only not being curious, but sometimes not even aware of what our biases are. And I spoke about this recently with a friend who then sent me a poem by Ryokan, which I also want to share. It has to do with listening and being curious. And I think these are some of the ways in which we can expand our ability to meet things that we're seeing, things or people or situations that we're seeing for the first time. So this is the poem. Before listening to the way, do not fail to wash your ears. That's the title. Otherwise, it will be impossible to listen clearly. What is washing your ears? Do not hold on to your view. If you cling to it, even a little bit, you will lose your way. What is similar to you but wrong, you regard as right. What is different from you but right, you regard as wrong. You begin with ideas of right and wrong, but the way is not so. Seeking answers with closed ears is like trying to touch the ocean bottom with a pole. So, some words from Zen Master Ryokan, which I think really expressed how sometimes we just don't take the time to listen and to question some of our own ideas about one another, about about situations that we're facing, and about how hard it is sometimes to listen to someone whose perspective is different from your own. I also wanted to share, so what an antidote for that or is being curious. And I appreciate the title of that book of Suzuki Roshi's teaching, Not Always So. Sometimes we can be surprised. And I've found this, you know, living in a new community of 300 people. There were only 200 when I moved in a year ago, but in the last year, more people have come. And we run into each other in the hallways. We eat together in the dining room. Sometimes we're in classes or listening to a talk together or watching a film. Trying to learn people's names. Trying to also, you know, I often go to the dining room alone, and I look around and I think, well, who might I sit with? And I'm trying to sit with people I'm not particularly drawn to. And I find when I do that, we start a conversation, almost always there's something we have in common, some interest, some place we've both been, something we've read, or it's really helping me to just notice who I'm drawn to, not always to sit with people who I'm drawn to, but who I might not otherwise get to know. And it's I think it's one way of creating connection in this large community, and many people are doing something similar. We also have one table that's a table that you can sit down at, and others will be seated there who are also coming alone. And it's very interesting to see what kind of conversation can evolve from that situation. So I think another way of working with some of our hesitancy or fixed views or sometimes just discomfort in a new situation comes from another teaching in Instructions for the Cook, and it's the teaching that there are three kinds of mind we can develop. Some of you may be familiar with this, but I think it never hurts to review it. What Dogen says is when working in any position of responsibility, so he's talking about the person who's in charge of the kitchen in a Zen community who has a lot of responsibility, strive to maintain a spirit of joy and magnanimity along with the caring attitude of a parent. So the three minds are joyful mind, parental mind, and magnanimous mind, or spacious mind. And joyful mind is described as a joyful spirit is one of gratefulness and buoyancy. And sometimes it can be cultivated by recognizing what we're grateful for. For me, I feel very grateful to still be able to drive, to be able to carry my cello, to be able to play my cello. My hands I don't have arthritis in my hands. Many things about being able to live in a beautiful place in Healdsburg, in this community where people are really learning how to take care of each other as we age. There are many committees at Enso Village, and one is called the Residence Care Committee. And it's a group of over 50 residents who are on call in case somebody is coming back from the hospital and needs to have meals brought to them, or somebody is ill, also might need to have food brought, or someone needs a ride to an appointment. And learning to take care of each other in those ways. And there's a a class that was designed first for the staff at Enzo Village, but also for the residents. It's called Mindful Community Training. And it teaches four basic, or it goes into four areas that are important for community life. The first one is awareness, just learning to pay attention. The second one is compassion, how we can develop compassion for ourselves and others. The third is dealing with grief and loss. And the fourth one is setting healthy boundaries. And the first class, so I took this class last October, and then I shadowed someone who taught it 1 month later, and now I'm going to be teaching it starting this Wednesday, four Wednesdays. I really wanted to do this because I think it's so helpful for people who are living in community to develop these qualities or awarenesses. And the first one, awareness, developing awareness, you know, most of the people at Enzo Village are not meditators, and this is new for many of them. And I think the opportunity to delve into these things in a group is another way of building community. So so the class on awareness has an exercise where you have a partner, everyone's in dyads, and one person asks the other, "What are you aware of now?" And the second person will respond, and then the question is repeated, "What are you aware of now?" And then the person listening just says, "Thank you. What are you aware of now?" And then it only goes on for 5 minutes, but that's a long time. And then you realize, I realized when I did this, when I was taking the class, I was very aware of the person who was my partner and what I noticed about my partner. My partner was very aware of her inner states, you know, her body. Oh, I have a muscle that's tight over here. Or it was very, very different, our responses. And after that, I started paying much more attention to what was going on inside my body and my mind, which I do in the Zendo, but not so much during the day. So I learned something about my own attention. Yeah, please sit in a comfortable position if you need to move. And then, so that joyful mind, I think I may not be making all the clearest transitions here, because I just want to say a little bit about these other minds. Parental mind, I think it's the way, sometimes grandparent mind as well, that Dogen says, parental mind in this is this the way that a parent cares for an only child, keeping the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, in your mind. A parent, irrespective of poverty or difficult circumstances, loves and raises a child with care. So can we respond to one another with that kind of mind? And then magnanimous mind is like a mountain, stable and impartial. Exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. Having a magnanimous mind means being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. And that may be difficult, and sometimes we may really not be aware of our prejudices, and sometimes taking sides may be beneficial. I think, you know, but can we do it while also respecting the people we disagree with? And I would say that can be very challenging, particularly nowadays. So there are a couple of other things I wanted to share about how we can heighten our awareness and our curiosity and our ability to be present. And recently I took a drawing class that was offered by one of the residents who's an artist. And the first class was about contour drawing. And I found that was an amazing practice. The instructions are has anyone done contact drawing here? Yeah, some of you have. So you place the point of your pencil on the paper, and then the object you're drawing is not in front of you, and you look at the object as if, well, and it's very done very slowly. We had to do one for 10 minutes, drawing our own hand, and you move your pencil as you're looking at the object, and place the point of your pencil on the paper. Imagine that your pencil point is touching the object instead of the paper. And without taking your eyes off the object, wait until you are convinced that the pencil is touching that point on the object upon which your eyes are fastened. And you move your eyes slowly along the contour of the object and move the pencil slowly on the paper. And I found that fascinating. I just saw my own hands so much more clearly. And recently, so I have a patio in my apartment, and it's kind of shaded, and I wanted to get a camellia tree to plant out there, and so I had a friend who visited me, and we went to a nursery, got the camellia tree, brought it home, and there was one blossom on it, and it was so exquisite. I started to draw it, and I have the, you know, I know that blossom is going eventually to fade, but I have this drawing of it, and I got to appreciate it so much more by just paying that kind of close attention to it. So I think I will. Oh, the other thing about the camellia, and some of you may enjoy plants, you may have gardens, you may have cats or dogs, and I think all these living things, whether they're our own or we see them in someone else's garden, can bring up a sense of gratitude and joy and wonder, which are all qualities, I think, that are helpful to cultivate in this, yeah, in general. And I think especially in a time when there's so much suffering and we may be doing all we can to respond to what's happening in our country and the world, but taking time to appreciate what brings us joy and beauty that we see around us is a reminder that there's so much that can enable us to recharge in times when we may feel really exhausted by what's happening around us. So I'm going to just read the rest of Emily Ligren's poem. It's from a book she has published, two books of poetry. This one is called Once I Was a Stone. She spent many years, she's quite young, she's in her 30s, but she's already had many years of working with young people in nature, taking school children on nature walks, and then she went back to school and got her MFA in creative writing, and I think her poems will be, or she will be, well known at some point as a great poet. I think she's already a great poet, but here's how it ends, the poem. So back to spiders. How the first sentence of every Google search preview about every kind of spider says whether it is venomous or not. I, who have loved spiders since I was 10, looked for them everywhere, studied their webs in wonder, am asking you to move more slowly. I want every person you ever meet to wear a necklace engraved with the words, "You have never seen me before. Take tender care." I want to replace all of the sentences about all spiders with that sentence. I want the message to look you right in the face so you remember to treat everyone like something bright and green and new, worthy of your slow attention. Even the spider at the corner of your closet, even someone you were told to fear, even your best friend or aging mother who you think you know but have never actually seen before as they are on this spring day, so full of pollen and dew. So I'm going to end there. Do we have time for questions and then the closing, or do we do the closing?
We usually have questions and then the closing.
Okay. So if you have comments or questions or anything you want to share about, yes, and if you wouldn't mind saying your name before you speak,
yes,
it'll help me.
Hi, my name is Michael. So when you were at the meal with some of your new community members, the ones that you kind of you finished yourself to meet and engage with, and you said you found some things in common with them, what were some of those things that you found in common with those folks that you perhaps surprised you were?
I found out sometimes... Well, people had done work that was inspiring to me, like many people who were there were teachers of different ages of young people. Some were trying to think of a specific example that might make it more alive. Well, one thing I discovered, I found several other people who grew up in the Bronx. That was a surprise to me, where I grew up. One person who worked in Berkeley as a nurse, and she worked in the school system, and her job was helping parents who were having difficulties with their children learn how to listen better to their children. And we actually had a singer, songwriter come to visit Enzo, who had been invited to come by this nurse, and the singer-songwriter talked about how this nurse had helped her with her son when she really had trouble understanding how to be a good mother to her son. And so that was one example. I just heard that story and I thought, wow, what a wonderful thing to do in your lifetime. I discovered a dinner with someone I didn't know, and we were both relatively new arrivals, that she had played the oboe professionally. And now she's learning the recorder, which is very easy for her because she's a wind player. There's someone else who was a bassoonist. I didn't necessarily learn all of this at one meal, but we now have a quartet of three recorders and a cello. What else did I? Just wonderful things about people and the way they make. Many people there have children and grandchildren, and some of them have children who are really struggling, or grandchildren who are really struggling, and hearing about what that's like, how painful that can be. One person I learned had been an actor and had actually acted at Berkeley Rep. And then he, later on, he got involved in a local theater production, and we all went to see him when he was in this amazing play. It's, you can't really tell until you talk to someone what you might find out that's heartwarming. And you know, many people have struggled, not everyone, in different ways, and almost everyone I've talked to has had a difficult time making the transition from where they lived before to Enzo Village, having loved a neighborhood, or having to leave friends, or a house that was very dear to them. And that's a place where it's easy to connect, because it was hard for me to make the transition. That's, thank you for that question. Kristen.
Tova, I was just appreciating having both lived residentially and practiced residentially, your references to community, and I was thinking, I don't know how many people here think of themselves as in community, and some of these awareness and attention practices, I was thinking, are valuable for people to recognize that they are in community, even though they might not talk about it as readily as those of us in some kind of intentional community where the word community is used a lot. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious, not that I'm asking anyone to answer, but I found myself wondering how many people here think of themselves as outside of the Sangha as living in community, and could apply some of what you're talking about this evening with that kind of frame.
Does anyone want to respond?
I'm Katrina. First, I just want to say thank you. It was a lovely talk and a beautiful message, and so much that I can apply to my life, and something I needed to hear right now. Someone I'm close to, I think I've been taking a little bit for granted and being irritated by. I'm going to try to apply some of the things you talked about tonight. And when you were talking about community, I did think of two things. One, just the community of my home with one other person, and how important it is to remember all those things, even when you live with just one person. But I also thought of my school. I work in an elementary school, and I was sitting here thinking to myself, could a Buddhist priest come and do a professional development day for a bunch of Catholic educators? I don't know if that could happen, but we could certainly use that message, and that could apply to any sort of community where you're spending a lot of time, not just where you live. So thank you, and thank you for your talk.
I think community is so important nowadays. Did someone have a hand? Yeah. Great.
I'm Rose.
Hi, Rose.
Thank you for your lecture. To answer your question about community, when we had tea earlier and we were talking about making a transition from the Bay to Sacramento and how difficult that was. Just even like the landscape for me, I moved from a hilly place to a flat place and found acceptance in our flat forest. But I also was saying that Huell Hausner, or I'm saying it wrong, from Channel 9 and his California Gold, how he would go to other places in California and point out the beauty and the things that they have contributed to California, and it really made me feel like every little place, Stockton is special, you know, Modesto is special. Like, we don't need to say we're better than other people. It's just we all have our gifts, and we are a big community in California.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's Daniel. So I have three quick points. The first point is my teacher, whom I have no doubt you know, Mary Mosine. Mm-hmm. She taught us not to throw the zabutons and the zafus, and that rubbed off on me. So I always wince when I see it happen. Number two, growing up, ever since I was a little kid, I just had a tremendous fear of spiders. I hated those things. And I really still do, you know, but I took it upon my practice to face my fears by saving all these spiders. So I've saved a tremendous amount of spiders now. And observing it going down, me trying to save the spider, it's always the same story. The spider is scared of me, and it's always hard to save. And so the last thing I want to say and ask you the question is, so I play classical guitar, and I don't know how this came up. The other day, my wife and I, we were talking Buddha, and I started talking about my guitar, and I was like, you know, every time I get ready to practice and I pull out my guitar, I bow to it. And, you know, whatever the reason, you know, because it's not just the guitar, it's not just me, it's guitar playing, and when I do that and have that frame of mind, you know, not all the time, but most of the time the playing is a little better. And so I wonder, do you too bow to your instrument and have that kind of practice?
I am so grateful for my instrument. I don't always bow to it, but maybe now I will. When I open the cello case and take it out. And you know, sometimes you wonder where, I wonder sometimes where I stop and my cello begins, or where my cello, you know, sometimes when I'm playing, I just feel like we are one. And I imagine you might experience that with your guitar. So thank you. I will bow to my cello.
Hi, I'm Patrick. Thank you for the talk. And my, I guess, question, when you were talking along the same lines of treating things with care and respecting them, I'm wondering, my mind jumped to technology and artificial intelligence. And I guess I'm wondering if you have any thoughts as kind of that becomes an odd, strange thing that we're going to have to deal with, treating that kind of thing with respect, but also I guess thinking also respecting ourselves in the process of not losing what we have, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think technology certainly makes many things easier, faster, I mean, I think it's wonderful that we can have people listening from home, sometimes able to ask. Yeah, are you able to ask questions? People are listening, yes, so they can. Yeah. So this is a way of creating connection as well. But I don't think it replaces like being here in the room together. And Suzuki Roshi talked about warm hand to warm hand. And I think it's helpful to remember some of the things that we may have learned from our elders, like how to cook. Many people don't cook nowadays. It's so easy to get food that's already made. And we have a group at Enso Village that does mending once a week. They have mending and learning how to use embroidery stitches to mend. Not everybody would mend that way, but often we don't mend our clothes. You know, we just pass them on or throw them away when they have holes in them or whatever. I think it's not that I sometimes feel old-fashioned because I still use paper. There's some people who, even at the Zen Center, who don't. I can understand using paper. Paper comes from trees. How do we retain some of, you know, I read books. Many people don't have actual books, and I also can see if you travel, it's helpful to have them all on a Kindle, but I have the feeling of a book, and I feel old-fashioned a lot of the time. And I think there must be a middle way, you know, about these things. And I think with artificial intelligence, you know, again, there's some advantages. You can get a summary of a meeting very easily. But, you know, if it's used, I don't think you can write poetry with artificial. You can, but it's not the same as actually, you know, really thinking about what verb is going to express what you want to say in a fresh way. And you know, when you get down to the craft of poetry and how it looks on the page, you know, I don't think artificial intelligence can do that. So I think there's a place for everything, but not to lose some of the things that take time. They take time. And can we give the time to creating things, to being with people and listening and taking the time to have a real connection? Yeah, I hope we don't lose those things.